of volunteers out there at the museum.
If the opportunity arises.
If you'd like to come up here, that's fine, sir. This is Mr. Gomez.
Goings?
Mr. Goings. Okay. Mr. Goings.
Pardon me?
Good morning. Could you please restate your name and your ABC number for the record?
Sure, Harold Goings, 45965.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a revocation hearing concerning the one allegation that's on your warrant. I see you were notified about this hearing on September 7th. Do you remember being notified? Okay, you signed a form that day. And on the form, your rights are explained. And one of your rights is that you could hire an attorney to represent you, or you can represent yourself. Now, we have your attorney in the room today, and we have a number of supporters. Let's see. Let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4. 6 supporters in the room today, sir, for you. Okay? So since we have your attorney here, there'll be some points in the hearing where I'll give you the option of having your attorney speak, or you, or it's however you want to do it. So we'll give you some options at some point. And among the other people that are in the room, it looks like I see Ms. Nichols, Rockwell Garnier, and Gordon have checked that they're going to speak. And then I can't read the other ones, I'm sorry.
I'm Melinda Goings and Nicole Newman.
Okay, Newman. Okay, there we go. And will you be speaking as well?
Yes.
Okay. Both of you?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I'd like to introduce you to the board members conducting the hearing today, Mr. Goings. If you look to your right, so my left, at that end of the bench, is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Right next to me here is the Honorable David Neal. On the other side of me here is the Honorable Michael Johnson. And my name is Gail Rittenhouse. I'll be the lead for your hearing today. And we also have with us in the room, and I'll get him on the camera for you there, that is Mr. Turner. He's with the Department of Corrections, and he'll represent the department and your parole officer in the hearing today.
Okay.
So before we get started.
Is parole officer Lopez there?
No, Parole Officer Lopez, and that Mr. Turner will represent Parole Officer Lopez. He has access to all your records through the computer.
Okay, thank you.
So that's his role in this hearing. So before we get started, I need to swear you, Mr. Turner, and everyone who's going to speak. So that's Patricia Nichols, Jillinger Rockwell, Deborah Garnier, Will Gordon, Omar Gurian? That's you. Okay. Oh, I don't need to swear you in. Nicole Newman and Melinda Goings. So, those people that I just mentioned, do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, and do you so affirm? Mr. Goings?
I do.
Mr. Turner?
I do.
Mr. Gordon?
Yes.
Mr. Garnier. Ms. Garnier.
I do.
Rockwell. Mr. Rockwell.
Can you rephrase the question?
I'm sorry?
Can you rephrase the question?
Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, and do you so affirm?
Can you rephrase it?
I don't understand your question.
I'm Christian. I don't understand the whole why God's got to be involved.
Well, I think that's the when you so affirm. Peace.
Okay, I do.
You so affirm. Okay. All right, that's totally fine. I know I lost track of where I was.
Garnier, I do.
Garnier, Deborah Garnier.
I do.
Thank you. Will Gordon?
Yes.
Thank you. Nicole Newman?
I do.
Thank you. And Melinda Goldis?
I do.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Goins, your hearing will be conducted in two phases. With phase one, to determine if you violated the terms and conditions of community supervision, and then phase two, to determine if that supervision should be reinstated or revoked. So, Mr. Goins, for phase one, I'm going to read the allegation to you, and I need you to respond whether it's true or false. And if you believe it's false, we'll take some testimony from Mr. Turner about the issue, and then we can discuss it. Okay, so Mr. Goins, the allegation on your warrant is that you were in violation of condition number six, as demonstrated by your being in possession of ammunition on or about August 13, 2018, in the Mesa Parole Office. Mr. Goins, is this true or false, sir?
It is true with an explanation.
Okay, well, in phase two, you'll have plenty of opportunity. Then we'll give you ample opportunity to explain anything you want. But for now, to move us from phase one to phase two here, I'm going to make a motion that I move to find Mr. Goins delinquent based on his admission as he violated the terms and conditions of supervision and may have lapsed or had lapsed into criminal vice or company.
Second.
Agreed.
Okay, motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Neal. Agreed. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Quinones. Okay. All right. Just filling out some paperwork there, Mr. Goins. And we'll move to phase two of your hearing, which is the part of the hearing where we determine if your supervision should be reinstated or revoked. And you and your attorney and all of your supporters will have a lot of, whatever opportunity they need to explain things. So, but before we start that, I'm going to ask Mr. Turner to give us all some background information. So, hold on just a moment. We'll be right back to talk with you further. Mr. Turner.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Goins was released from ABC custody on 1-7-2012 and arrested on 8-13-2018 by ABC staff. No new charges are noted. He's returned back to ABC custody on 8-13-2018. He does have a CSED of life. Zero abscondes. Current conviction, 1986, commitment B, count one, armed robbery, 99 years. 1986, commitment B, count two, burglary first degree, 99 life sentence. 1986, commitment B, count three, robbery, 12 years. 1986, commitment B, count four, burglary third degree, 12 years. 1986, commitment B, count 5, robbery, 12 years. 1986, commitment B, count 6, burglary, 3rd degree, 12 years. Prior convictions, 1980, theft, 4 years. This is his first term in ABC with a CUIR score of 3-2. Mental health score of 1, substance abuse score of 2. No STD information, no prior terms of supervision noted. Disciplinary is significant and lengthy with possession, manufacturing of a weapon, rioting, drugs, disorderly conduct, and threatening with harm noted. Under arrest, 1982, robbery, Colorado, federal prison. He has a GB score of G1, V2.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. G1, V2, okay. Okay, back to Mr. Goins. It looks like you were released to live initially at 5654 East Decatur in Mesa. And then just a couple of weeks later, it looks like you went to 5544 East Arbor in Mesa. Is that correct?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I resided at 5554 East Decatur from January of 2012 to January of 2018.
Okay. Oh, I see. Yes, it is. My mistake. Okay. So you were there the whole time?
6 years, yes.
And you didn't live anywhere else other than there? Okay.
Just there.
All right. Thank you. The map says something different here. It looks like you were working at Jiffy Lube, Francis and Sons, GC Services. What's GC Services?
GC Services is a call center that employs personnel for taking calls for Apple, Sterling, and Entergy, which is a power company in southeast Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas.
Oh, wow, okay. All right, so you served quite a territory there, didn't you? Okay, and it looks like you were also responsible for submitting submitting urine samples, and you had a number of them. I see in 2014 there were a number that had the positives for alcohol. In 2014, in January, November, and October, November, and again in 2015, in March, August, and in February of 2016, you had positives for alcohol, sir. What was going on there?
Well, there was a period of time there when my mother had passed away, and I was having a hard time. When I was released back in 2012, I was released to that address to be a caretaker for her and my stepdad, her current husband at the time, John Frosty. And he passed away a year after she did. So there was just a brief time there that I was, you know, struggling with that. And not all of those were alcohol. I believe there was a few of them were, there's an enzyme, an ETG or something like that, shows up if you've consumed alcohol, you don't have alcohol in your system, but within the past 5 or 6 days, it'll show up if you had consumed alcohol, and that enzyme will show up. And as you mentioned, the date, 2016, I've been not had anything since that time.
Okay.
In fact, Mr. Quinones, he looks familiar. I believe he was there last year. I submitted an application for an absolute discharge, and, you know, we went over all of this before, but the request for absolute discharge was denied, and I was just about to submit another one when this happened.
Okay. All right, sir. So since the 2016, then, you haven't used alcohol again?
No, I've had some subsequent random UAs. My parole officer would call me. I've worked down to unsupervised parole. They would call me, and Mrs. Lopez would call me to tell me to go put in one, and I went and put in one, and everything's been clean.
Okay, good. Yeah, your record shows that you submitted 41 samples, so those all seem to be around that time period. Okay. All right. There's quite a bit of detail here concerning the alcohol violations. Okay, sir.
When those occurred, ma'am, there was programs that I was enrolled in through the parole office and the CHC. I took some classes, some programs. I don't even remember. I've had so many parole officers right now, I don't remember which one it was that sent me to a place in Phoenix for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So I successfully completed all of those programs to take care of that issue.
Okay. So you were going to explain, or certainly you can, anytime you want, you can have your attorney speak. So I don't want to,
okay,
say it always has to be you, but you're doing a fine job. So what was it you wanted to explain? You said you had more to explain about the...
Well, what I've done is I've written down, you know, a brief summary of things to let you know that my attorney advised me to do.
And okay.
First of all, I'd like to state I'm not much of a public speaker, but I will give it my best try.
Well, you're doing fine.
And, thank you. So a string walks into a bar and orders a drink. This bartender tells the string, we don't serve strings in here. So the string goes outside, ties himself in a knot, comes back inside and orders another drink. Bartender says, you're the same string that walked in here before. We don't serve strings in here. Get out of here. So the string goes outside, clips his top and frizzes it up and walks back in. Bartender says, look, I told you before we don't serve strings in here. You've been in here before. You've been in here two times. First was a string, then you tied a knot yourself. Now you're back again, and the string says, I'm afraid not. So, as we all know already, my name is Harold Goins, and I'm 58 years old. Born and raised in Mesa, Arizona, graduated from Mesa Mountain View High School in 1978. In 1987, I received a 25 life sentence under ARS 1360402, a sentence that was abolished in the early 90s to 2000 In Apprendi versus New Jersey, 530 U.S. 466, it is required that a jury, not a judge, find aggravating factors that increase a crime punishment beyond the statutory maximum. In my case, it was a 25 flat years with no parole. But I was granted, as you mentioned already, granted parole effective January 7, 2012. I resided as a caretaker for my mom that had acquired dementia, and my stepdad was on oxygen after an automobile accident. They passed away within a year of each other, my mom in 2013 and John in 2014. And I remained renting that house until January of 2018. Yeah, the owner wanted to sell it, so I had to move. So then, at that time, I moved in with Ms. Deborah Garnier, where we now live together since the middle of January 2018. And if you don't have a record of that address, it's 5544 East Arbor Avenue in Mesa, Arizona. Now, in 2004, my son Seth, of 18 years old, passed away in a car accident in Oregon. And my biological father died in 2009, and my older brother died in 2010. It wasn't until around July of 2012 that I became aware that I have another son. I had gotten in touch after I was released with Dillinger's mom, who I found out was living in Illinois, and he was living there with her. And we submitted, the three of us did one of those DNA thingy tests, you know, and it, well, yeah, it was confirmed I am the father. She could have went on Maury Povich or something anyway. Let's see. And he came out to visit in 2013, and while he was out here visiting, he's decided he was going to move out here. So he went back to Illinois, saved up some money, and moved out here with me in 2015. And we were living together at the house on Decatur from 2015 until January 2016, when we had to part our ways because he has a job somewhere else, I have a job somewhere else, and the owner was selling the house, so we couldn't stay there anymore. So he has his own place. He doesn't reside with me or Debbie anymore. And my first job was for approximately 8 to 9 months with Jiffy Lube as an oil and lube technician, and upon learning that I would not be able to be promoted to management because the owner did not want to promote ex-felons, I left them to go work for Francis and Sons and became a manager for their oil and lube shops associated with their car washes. And after working there for 3 years under conditions of no vacation pay, no sick pay, no benefits, I found a job with GC Services where I'm at right now. And as I mentioned before, it's a call center, and I work for GC Services, but I take in calls for the power company of Entergy. I'm a service initiation representative, business representative, and a web account management representative to help customers manage their accounts online at energy.com. That came out automatically. Steve on the phone telling them that all the time. And when reinstated, I believe upon my work record, I will be able to go back and work for them. I do have strong relationships with my sister, Patricia Nichols, and my nephews, and an exceptional and still new relationship with my son. My stepmother, Millie Goins, is included and lives in the White Mountains up near Sunrise Ski Resort. I have surrounded myself with family and friends of good moral character. I have maintained employment and residence since my release. I have not had any significant violations since release with my, I have no police contact, no drugs, and have been a law-abiding citizen, an exemplary member of society, and very productive. Now, I'm going to get to the meat of the matter here. First off, I thought Parole Officer Lopez was going to be there, and I do want to sincerely apologize to her for telling her a brief fib upon the time that she found this ammunition on me. But when she showed me what was in that zippered pocket of the bike, what I call a bike bag, and I believe maybe my attorney has it, because I asked Ms. Garnier to bring that so that he could show, because I was supposed to describe it. I don't know if I'm too good at giving descriptions, but it's made out of leather, has a couple of snaps on the top for hooking to your belt loops, and a Velcro strap for your leg, to go around your leg. There's some nice big pockets in it, and on the outside exterior are two zippered pockets, one at the top and one at the bottom. And, let's see. So she asked me when I was going through the metal detector, I had placed everything, my motorcycle gloves, my headscarf, my watch, my belt, my phone and phone case, I put in one of those large pockets on the bike bag, and went through the metal detector, didn't clear it, but that's because I had my motorcycle boots on, so Parole Officer Lopez wanded my feet, that's the boots that set off the detector, and she asked to look at the bag. I gave her the bike bag, and I was in the process of putting my belt back on and my phone and phone case, when she had opened the bottom zippered pocket on that and held it back.
What are you doing with these?
And I looked in there, and I was like, in my mind, I was thinking, what am I doing with these? But out of my mouth came, because Ms. Garnier and I had just been camping a weekend or two before, out of my mouth came, I use those to start fires, campfires when I go camping, which is, you know, sounds ridiculous now, but I thought at the time that it sounded a lot better than I don't know, because I don't know was, truthfully, the answer was I don't know what those were, what I was doing with those. And, but I have since learned that my son, Mr. Rockwell, had used the bag to go target practicing and left the ammunition in there in that bottom pocket. And I never used that bottom pocket, so I wasn't even aware that it was in there. Let's see. I have not possessed guns, ammunition, or even 4th of July fireworks. You know how bad I wanted to buy fireworks, but I don't think I'm allowed to have those, so I didn't ever even have any of those since I've been out. I've been to watch some fireworks, but I've never purchased them. Let's see, I do know that I should have been more responsible and checked the pockets on that bag, but I didn't know that anyone else was using it. As I said before, Ms. Garnier and I went camping the weekend of August 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and I didn't take the bag with me at that time. Let's see, where did I leave it? And I didn't know if my son was going to, if he used it that, I don't know if he used it that weekend or if he used it before that weekend. I'm not sure. Because sometimes he would use my truck and the bike bag would be in the truck of the cab or the toolbox in the truck. Other times the bike bag would be in the Arizona room of the house on top of my toolbox or the workbench. When I'm reinstated, I expect to work again for GC services. As I mentioned, I do have a good work record there. I have a strong support system with Ms. Garnier, my family, my friends, and will continue my relationship with all of these people. You were, like, when you read off the charges and stuff, you know, I really do understand what you mean by if I fell back in with a criminal crowd or not. I haven't. I mean, I've seen and talked to people just in this brief time that I've been here that come back and they talk about going back out and hanging with the same friends in the same neighborhoods and doing the same things, and I'm like thinking to myself, you're going to be back in here if you do those things, and I tell them that because, as you can see from my record, I've been out over 6.5 years, no plans, had nothing of coming back to this place, and this is just, I don't know how you describe it. Freak accident, irresponsibility on my part for not checking the pockets of that bag before going into the parole office. And in closing, you know, I'd like to say that, you know, sometimes people are innocent, but the circumstances can make them appear quite otherwise. Thank you.
Okay.
That's all I want to say on that. I didn't know here if my attorney, and you say Mr. Gurian, owner is there?
Yes, he is.
Oh, I thought Mr. Huddle was going to be there, so I'm surprised. Okay, so
Mr. Glines, this is Omar Dragon.
Some things to add?
Okay.
Mr. Glines, just for your information, Mr. Huddle, his wife had a baby, which is why I'm standing in format this year, I think.
All right.
Well, that's fantastic. When you speak to him, tell him congratulations.
Okay, so Mr. Goings, we're at a point in the hearing. Let me first just ask if my fellow board members have any questions. Any questions for Mr. Goings?
Is that the bag?
It is the bag.
You want to look at the bag?
Yeah, I just wanted to look at the inside of it.
hooks on the leg, it looks like.
Yeah.
And then the belt.
It's a holster. Gun holster.
Okay.
I thought you were moving apart.
Yeah.
I just wanted to just see, I mean, it's a fanny pack, but it is a, it's a fanny pack, but it's a fanny pack with a, it's a gun holster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's inside of here. The holster.
Right, that's why my son would use it sometimes when he went target shooting.
So, Mr. Goines, you have not used it as a...
No, what I use it for is that outside, that top zippered pocket is where I place my cigarettes and lighter when I'm riding the motorcycle so they don't blow out of my shirt pocket. And as I mentioned, when I go into stores or anything like that, I take my headscarf and my motorcycle gloves and put them in that pocket, in one of those larger pockets.
Okay.
That's all I use it for.
All right. Okay. Any other questions for board members?
Yes.
Mr. Quinones has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Goines, I'm just curious, why did you share this bag? Meaning it has a dual function as a holster, there were 45 rounds in it. It just seems that with so much at stake on your parole status, that you would be careful about your access to firearms. So,
yes, sir.
Why did you share this back?
That's a good question. Well, as I mentioned in my statement here that I said, I wasn't aware that he was using it. It's, I've since learned that, unknown to me, that's what he was using it for, and then when there's a holster in there, so I understand. But, yeah. It wasn't until this incident happened, Mr. Quinones, and believe me, no one else will be using it when I'm back to using it again. It's like my truck, you know. I always look in the bed of the truck. If someone has taken my truck, I look in the bed of my truck. I look in the toolbox, look in the glove box, the console. Anytime someone else has used something of mine, I'm always checking it to make sure there's nothing in there that I'm not supposed to have. But that's when I know someone's using it. And I didn't know until this incident happened that he was using that bike bag.
And this is the motorcycle?
Yes.
Okay, so you're a regular motorcycle driver. Did you purchase this bag?
Actually, Ms. Garnier bought that for me. I don't know if that was a birthday or a Father's Day present.
Okay. I'm going to be very glad, Mr. Goines. I don't know what's in your heart. I don't know what happened. I work very hard to be neutral and detached. I'm just looking for a plausible reason for as to how this unfolded. So thank you for being so direct.
Okay.
Can I
ask a question? Sure, Mr. Johnson
is here. So, sir, why did you mention that this was a gun holster when you were talking about the bag? Because it's definitely a gun holster.
Yes, sir. I don't know. And like I said, Ms. Garnier bought it as a gift because if I was going to purchase one, I would have purchased one without a holster. Why I didn't mention it?
Why didn't you mention it?
I just never used it. I've never used it.
So you described this as a fanny pack that you were just carrying around that you were using, but so the bag, those particular type bags and bags very similar to those are designed for the main purpose of carrying and concealing a weapon, and the other pouches on there are actually for that. So you have a bag that you talked about it, but you never mentioned anything about having a holster inside of it. And that's exactly designed to do exactly that. The gun fits inside of the interior of the bag, and it fits inside of the holster. You could carry, with those bags in there, you could carry If it's an automatic, you can carry extra rounds or extra rounds inside of, clips inside of there. That's the main purpose of that bag, sir. And you, it just, it kind of bothers me that you have possession of this bag and you describe all the things that's, that you use the bag for, but you never mention that the bag has the holster in it. And that, I mean, that and similar fanny packs are designed and used exactly for that, sir.
Well, sir, I didn't mention the holster because I don't use it for that. And like I said, the bag was a gift. I've never used the holster. And I can see your point, though. And like I mentioned, if I would have bought my own bag, I would have looked for one that didn't have a holster.
Well, sir, I would think that when you looked in there that you served time in prison for armed robbery. For robbery, and you got a holster that you carrying around with you, and you really sound like it's really not no big deal. You know, that you got a bag that out of all the different kind of bags that you could use, that's the type of bag that you would have.
I really don't know how to respond to that because it's not, I do consider it a big deal, but when it was given to me and I noticed the holster, it didn't concern me because I don't own or possess a gun and or carry one.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Mr. Neal has a question for you as well.
Yes, sir. So this is $45 ammunition from Dad in Hollow Point, correct? That's what the picture looks like.
What was in there? I just saw it when she was in the parole officer Lopez showed it to me. I just seen that there were rounds in there.
Okay, and yeah. This is a certified caliber, which by your explanation would be consistent with your son using it for his 45 caliber pistol. But it was 18 rounds. Two things puzzled me about how 18 rounds of 45 caliber Dagger and Hollow Point ammunition could be in your bag that you're going to wear and even notice it, because 18 rounds is really pretty heavy, an awkward, and would be different than the normal load that you're carrying in there by your own storage result.
I'm sorry, that is a large round.
Right, 45 caliber, large round, Dagger and Hollow Point are heavy, but the thing that puzzles me more than anything else is how you could explain away this ammunition by saying use it to start campfires. But, that would hollow point, anything that's of good quality is going to put a 45 caliber pistol, is rather expensive. The other thing is, you have to have tools to take those apart. It's very, if they're even real, to put together tight enough that you can't just jiggle it out. Now, if you got some cheap reloads that are all bad or all lead cartridges or the bullet itself, those are really easier to get apart. But the jogging ones, you got to have pliers to take them apart, usually two pair. So, an amount of powder in there, it would take, to really start a good fire, it would take several of them, unless you have the proper kindling, which you wouldn't need for anyway. So, the whole explanation, it just kind of keeps rolling in the wrong direction, so to speak.
Yes, sir.
When you talk to the CO, you explain the way you use it to start campfires. And now you're saying you really didn't know a lot of there, and your son must have borrowed enough in there and all that. When PM talked to your son, he didn't say he had a 45 caliber gun, but he said he had no knowledge of why you would have ammunition. Okay, as all said, there's, that many rounds in that type of bag, the weight's got to be noticeable, and also the rest of the box or the magazines, they're going to be rattling around in there. And you say you take it off and put your other stuff in it, and everything, I find it hard to believe because we use a bag all the time. Doing their own things, that all of a sudden 18 rounds of 45 caliber ammunition with it, and you don't notice the weight or the bulkiness of it. So, it's very hard for me to understand those explanations on this. And like, one of the reasons why I think Mr. Johnson is, looking at your history, that's part of what you, your history indicates weapons, okay?
And Mr. Neal, that was over 30 years ago, which after doing the 25 flat years of being released, I have not gone back to that lifestyle. And to answer your question about why I said I used them for campfires, like I said, when Parole Officer Lopez showed it to me, I was almost literally floored by seeing them in there and surprised. And we had gone camping before, and that was what I said, and it's not true. Putting that bike bag on and off myself, I never did notice the difference in any weight, because I'd have other things in there sometimes. You could put a bottle of water, put a bottle of Powerade or whatever in there. The weight difference, I just never noticed the difference in the weight while those were in there.
Okay, thanks, sir.
Mr. Goins, which pocket were the rounds in? The top pocket or the bottom?
No, the top zippered pocket is the one I would put my lighter and cigarettes in. The bottom zippered pocket is where they were at, and I never even used that pocket.
Okay, all right, sir.
Please. So, sir, when you carried this bag, how did you carry it?
It would be like the belt loops. Let's see if I can get down. Well, let's see. Belt loops on my pants, the snaps are hooked into the belt loops, and the Velcro strap down around the leg.
Like a holster.
Well, I guess you could consider it like that.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Goins, we're going to then turn to your supporters, and I don't know, sir, if you want to start or you want to call people up, or what we'll do is we'll have, just ask, since there are many of you, that you not repeat something that's already been said and be, reasonably concise.
Absolutely. And if I could just start with a comment, I'll make sure to keep it.
As each person comes up, please just come up and state your name, because we record these hearings. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
And my name is Omar Gurian. I'm Mr. Goins' attorney.
Thank you.
And honorable members of the board, I think you can hear Mr. Goins' contrition here. I don't think anyone would accuse Mr. Goins of doing something smart here, but on the other hand, what person brings 18 rounds of jacketed hollow points into their probation officer's office on purpose, knowing that they're going to be scanned, that they're going to be looked at? Mr. Goins, I think, unfortunately, was not careful enough and was stupid, and he should have never had this particular bag. I agree with Mr. Johnson that it is irresponsible for someone in Mr. Goins' position to even possess such an item. However, when a person motorcycles, one is at a lack for storage. And this item is convenient, it attaches to the body, and produces a way for a person to carry their personal items, which is what Mr. Goins was present. When I spoke with Mr. Goins at the Arizona Department of Corrections upon our first meeting, I was shocked, frankly, by the amount of support that he has, that the board will soon see. There are many people here to speak on his behalf, including his son, Derek, who will explain to the board that he, in fact, did use this particular bag when he went shooting. I don't know that Derek can say with certainty that he let rounds in there, but he certainly used that particular bag for shooting, which would explain our presence. Mr. Goins, I think, did something stupid. He compounded an error by not only bringing ammunition that he should have really been on the lookout for in this bag into the office, but then by fibbing about it, because he panicked. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I do not believe that anything that this board has heard suggests that Mr. Goins is reverting back to his criminal ways. To the contrary, I think his record on parole is quite commendable. 6.5 years after 25 flat years in the Department of Corrections with minimal violations is impressive. He did struggle with some alcohol abuse. However, he took the resources offered by his parole officer, took advantage of that, and was able to kick the habit, as his UAs show. Mr. Hutto, who was handling this matter prior to having a child, was speaking with Ms. Lopez prior to coming here, and although I understand to be the position of the parole officers, that they do not recommend reinstatement or not. My understanding from his conversations with her was that she had said that Mr. Gomez was doing pretty well on parole up until this violation. I know that Mr. Gomez is taking this incredibly seriously, that being taken out of his life and plunged into ADC Yuma has been a shock to his system, and I'm certain that he will be a different parolee once he is released. And I would ask the board, after listening to all the people willing to speak on his behalf, to reinstate him with no additional conditions. And with that, I think the best first person to speak will be his girlfriend, Deborah.
Sure.
Just come up and say your name when you feel like it.
This is my son, William, and he served in the Air Force. And I'll stop first, I guess.
So please start by saying your name.
Last time I just cried and I didn't say nothing smart. Okay, my name is Deborah Garnier and I'm 58 years old. I live in Arizona. I lived in Arizona since 1964. And my parents moved us here from Maine. After my parents divorced in 1968, my mom moved us to Mesa in 1969, and I went to school in East Mesa, and I attended Mesa Community College, and then my dental hygiene degree, and I got hit.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we are.
I met Harold in junior high school, and we attended Fremont Junior High, and we were both in the top choir. We got to perform at other schools and compete in local contests along with being active in several school plays. We also were in high school together and graduated from Mountain View High School in 1978. He took me out on one date back in those days of high school, and then after a brief, long pause of our friendship, Harold and I got reconnected in 2012, and he was a big help to me as I was putting together my 35th high school reunion. It's just the women in the Harold was very excited to tell me because this would be his very first high school reunion. He could attend, which took place in September 2013. And we have been together since July 2012, and we really get along very well. We have become very close, and he has become my roommate since January 2018, and he has helped me a lot in many ways. He's financially responsible, he pays more than half of his shared bills, he does his share of housework, his yard work, and he keeps it his maintained. And prior to us becoming roommates, we were taking care of our parents. We were in need of constant care due to their health and their old age. Harold's mother passed away in April 2013, and his stepdad passed away later in May 2014, in the end of April, and my mom lost to me so many, and she's in my heart, of August 2017. So now, it's time for us to enjoy each other fully, and he is very kind and thoughtful, and he is a great roommate and a friend to me. And Harold is very caring, and I consider a person, and I know he was unaware of any condition being in his pouch, and I just didn't even have a gun, so I don't know. So I know that that would have not been on his mind. He was simply going into the parole office looking forward to seeing Mrs. Lopez, and she has been out to our house, and we really enjoy seeing her. And after his meeting with her, he was planning to come home for dinner with me, but the situation was completely unexpected and was a shock to both of us. So here we are today, hoping the board will find him innocent and please release him. Thank you. This is my son, William. He's here for my moral support.
Okay. Thank you. If you'd like to speak, sir, just state your name and then.
I'm Lenny Gordon. I know Harold since the time I got on the Air Force back in December 2012, his helping my mom take care of her mom and his mom, his dad, and background on the Air Force. I went with my mom, got to see, I don't know anything really about him, but I got to see him as a person and how he cared. I took care of his mom, my mom, everyone. He really took care of everyone coming back, and it was such a good thing for me to see, because I'm starting back from nothing, because when I was in the Air Force, I did munitions, and there's really no transferable jobs, and you get out of the military, and you're doing bombs and bullets. And so, seeing someone being able to care for my mom really means a lot to me during that time. There's a lot of changes. I came all the way back from Georgia, drove all the way across the 10, 14 hours in Texas, just driving, and then I got back, and I was taking care of my ex-wife at the time. And so, it was really nice to have him around caring. That's my first time actually meeting Mr. Goins at that time. And ever since then, he's always been there. He's always been a productive member. He's had a job. And I learned more about his past, and I would never guess the type of person he is that set of past he had. He's never been angry or violent. He's never shown any signs of it actually being a criminal. So, like, to hear going back to criminal activity, it actually really shocked to hear all of you say that. I've never seen anything like that, of him going backsliding in any direction that way. And I know all of you had great questions of circumstance. Mr. Johnson, he said, well, your bag is a holster. Well, many times I've had objects I've used not for their purpose. I've used mason jars for planters. I've used suitcases, or who knows, put hangers in because I need extra storage. Mr. Neal, I know you're talking about the weight of bullets and talking about an off-the-cuff comment when someone's panicking. I've made stupid comments under pressure. I've made stupid comments being super nervous again now, but I'm trying to talk through it. But you're talking about the weight of bullets. I remember working in munitions. I had like 20 rounds of 5.56 in my pouch, popped in my leg. I don't even know until I was leaving at the end of the day, and pulling out like, oh, well, we're not bringing these home. I'm going to check them back in. And someone's on your leg, if you're wrenches, I don't even notice until the end of the day when I actually go and check. So I can understand that, like, maybe for you, you didn't feel on your leg, but for me, something on my leg being a customary thing, and it feels like work. I just never put in your nose, so I check my pocket. But as far as going back to Mr. Goins's character, he's really done a lot. He's a good person. I think he's a victim of circumstance. So I ask that you take into consideration these different things. And I hope he is able to continue back in society, helping people out, and really being there for the community, my mom, and really everyone else. Whoever asks you, probably be sure off his back to help you out, so please consider that.
Okay, sir. Any questions for either Ms. Garney or Mr. Gordon?
Thank you for your
thank
service.
Thank you, sir. And thank you for your service.
Thank you, Will. Just stay your hand on the board, okay?
I'm Dylan Duraco. I'm Harold's son.
Okay, and what would you like to tell the board?
Prepare something so that I wouldn't get beat up by the anxiety here.
Yeah, son, you don't realize how nervous you're going to be until you get up there and have to speak.
So, I know it has been kind of glossed over, but my father has done an awful lot to help those around him, family, friends, and co-workers. He's helped many co-workers in their moves or to repair their vehicles. He's a very unselfish person. He's worked at the same job for over 3 years at GC Services. For over a year, I've worked with him there as well, so I can attest from knowledge that he does really well there. His co-workers and managers adore him a lot. He's also helped me out a lot since I moved back here from the Chicago area. Whenever I've needed it, no questions asked, he'll help me with my grocery shopping, or if I need to blow off some steam and use his truck, he'd let me borrow that for the time that we need it. He made some bullet points of other things. Like I said, he's not selfish. He's a very generous person with with money and just objects and things. He was currently working to save up to buy his first home, and so that shows he's got a very great credit score. He's working with a realtor and financing. He had approved for a certain amount already, so he was just waiting on buying the house. He always would pay his bills and rent on time, never had any delinquencies or the power shut off. Ultimately, he's become a productive member of society since his release. A lot of other parolees can't say that.
Thank you, sir. Any questions?
I just said, so when he said his son was using the bag.
That is me.
That was you that was using the bag? Okay. And what did you use the bag for?
Well, there are multiple calibers that I use for target practice in the desert because you don't have to follow all the guidelines of a shooting range, and so it's a little more lax if you go find an acceptable spot in the desert, which is why I choose to do that. Just having one book bag with all the different calibers, my cousin brought along his shotgun, which if you know what 12-gauge box of shells, it's not easy to carry at all, and so that filled up the backpack really quick. I did find the leg bag in the truck, and so figured I could throw my loose shells in there instead of making multiple trips, because the spot for the shooting was about a half-mile hike from the truck, and so it made more sense to bring more bags than to make multiple trips.
And what kind of weapon would you have used to shoot those?
That was with my 45. I used that bag, and he never told me that it had a holster in it. It wasn't until I found the bag in the truck that I noticed and said, hey, this is a bonus. And
so you used the holster part of it that day?
So that way I didn't have to carry as much in hand.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Quinones has
just a quick question. And sir, please, I am not scrutinizing you for owning a firearm if you have the legal right to own a firearm. Is this a firearm that you purchased in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay. Can you explain the firearm?
It's a Ruger Blackhawk 45.
Okay,
two different cylinders, one for long Colt and one for standard 45. So it could hold two different types of ammunition.
Did you buy it brand new?
I believe it was used.
Okay. I'm trying to roll the story and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Melinda Goings, and I'm writing this letter on behalf of my uncle, Harold Goings, to shed light on his character and my relationship with him. Okay. I didn't have a chance to see my uncle growing up, as I was very little when he was incarcerated. My mother would often visit him with my grandmother, my Aunt Nikki, and my Aunt Trish. As I grew older, we began writing back and forth to each other often. He would draw me cartoon pictures, send me letters to let me know how his day was, and that he was okay. We were also allowed to send recorded cassette tapes back and forth to each other, which we did as well. When my uncle was released 7 years ago, he called to surprise me with the good news. I was so thankful and relieved that he was finally a free man. We met for lunch the next day and spent hours catching up. It was the very first time he had met my children. Since he's been released, we've had many family gatherings, barbecues, birthdays, etc. We see each other at least every few weeks. My uncle also took care of my grandparents for several years after their health was declining. When he was not at work, he was at home cooking, cleaning, taking care of their every personal and medical need. He did this until they passed away. I'm hoping you can show my uncle mercy by taking into consideration his overall good behavior since being released 7 years ago. He is a good man with a good heart, and it's very hard to establish himself. He's had the same full-time job for several years, was in the process of buying a home, and most of all, has a family who loves him very much. And we need him as much as he needs us. He has paid a great price for the choices he made in his early 20s. He's missed out on so much, including knowing his youngest child, Seth, who passed away at the age of 18 in a horrible car accident. He wasn't allowed to attend his funeral. Please find it in your heart to allow him to continue growing and becoming a better man.
Thank you, Ms. Goins. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mindy.
I know you said no repetition, but it seems like there's a lot of that, so I apologize to the attorneys for the
story. Try not to state your name, though.
My name is Nicole Newman.
Okay.
I'm just reading the letter. Good morning, my name is Nicole Newman. I'm Harold's little sister. I'm here today along with my family to support my brother. I'm sure I will say a few things that others in my family will as well, so I apologize for the repetition. I was 8 when Harold was incarcerated, so I really didn't understand the magnitude of it. I understood he was gone, but my mom made sure that we stayed connected. He would send me trinkets that he made for me throughout the years. He called home all the time. We wrote constantly. I even memorized his ID number. I still have it memorized. We spent many holidays visiting him, and my mom was always sending care packages when it was allowed. Shortly after Harold was sentenced, our mom adopted his 9-month-old son, Seth. She brought him home to keep him close, and she would take him to visits so that Harold could see him. She was very devoted to keeping us close and showing our support for him. Sadly, as you've heard, Seth was killed in a car accident while Harold was in prison, and it was really her mom's.
You were right.
In 2009, my parents were also in a very bad car accident. It was devastating. My dad was in the ICU for almost 5 months. My mom had severe head trauma. Her health was never the same after that, and when Harold was released, he moved in with them and immediately started caring for both the parents. At the time of his release, I had moved to Nevada and had a family, so I would drive down as often as I could, but it wasn't as much as I wish I had now. Between Harold and his girlfriend Debbie, my older sister Trisha, they cared for my parents devoutly up until my mom's passing in 2013 and my dad's passing in 2014. Harold never wavered in his devotion to my mom, just like she never wavered in hers for him during his entire sentence. He lived with them and cared for them 24/7, all while trying to adjust to an entirely new life, honestly. Since his release, he has maintained a steady job. Not only has he maintained, but he's worked his way up from a labor job to an office job, one which he has held for 3 years now. He has stayed focused on work. He has saved money to buy a house. He bought a truck and a motorcycle that he's very proud of. He has highly interacted with our family. He has had the same girlfriend the entire time. He's just living a normal life now. I know he makes mistakes, we all do, but please take into account how well adjusted he has become. He is a productive, providing, tax-paying member of society. He has a family that needs him and a large support system. So, without minimizing his mistakes, I would ask that you please put them into perspective in the large picture of his highly functioning life. And I ask for your compassion when determining whether or not you would remand him for a life sentence when he has taken so many steps forward. It would be devastating to us all. He will learn from this and change accordingly. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
Please state your name.
My name is Patricia Nichols.
Okay.
And I am Harold's older sister. My brother is a very good person. Like it's been repeated over and over again, he's taken care of us. He's taken care of me when I needed help. He takes care of his friends. And coming in here for these almost 2 months has just been devastating to me because I can't sleep very well. He has, I feel, has been adjusting to the outside world from prison life. He's held his job. He was in the process, I know this is repeating, but he was in the process of buying a home. He has done tremendously well. I don't have no prepared paper. Like Mindy said, we're family and we try to stay together. We have barbecues and things. And please, please find it in your heart to reinstate his parole. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thanks, Trish.
Thank you. Okay, so. Okay, so Mr. Green, any other, is there anyone else? Oh, Mr. Turner.
Yes, ma'am, I know it's late in the hearing, but I received an email from one of the other parole officers in the office.
Okay.
Is there a chance that we could get Ms. Lopez on the phone?
Sure.
Because there's some differing information I'd like to be clarified. I was informed that the offender actually informed her prior to searching the bag he had the ammunition in there. And then initial contact with the son is that he stated he had never used the bag. So if we could just get some clarification.
Okay.
I'm sorry, excuse me, I'm having a very difficult time hearing
this. I believe this to be her personal phone number, so I'll bring that to you.
Okay.
What were you doing?
We're going to get your parole officer on the phone. He was just telling us.
Oh, he was, that, okay.
And we're going to get some information.
Yeah, he wasn't hooked up to a microphone or something. I couldn't hear him.
We didn't
well.
Have his mic on, I don't think. 395-621. Hello? Good afternoon. Is this morning? I mean, is this Pia Lopez?
It is.
Hi, this is Gail Rittenhouse. It's the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and we're conducting a hearing right now for Mr. Harold Goings.
Yes.
And we understood that you would have some information to add to this. If you're willing to do that, I'm going to try to turn the volume up on this phone if I can do that.
Okay.
That must not. Oh, here, this is probably the way.
Yes.
Over here?
Yes.
There we go. Okay. If I can do that without getting feedback, sometimes we do that. Pio Lopez, before you. To give us any information, I do need to swear you in. So,
okay.
Ms. Lopez, do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth? So help you God, and do you so affirm?
I do.
Thank you. Okay, Ms. Lopez, what was the information you wanted to share? And I think it was particularly regarding the allegation when Mr. Goings came to the parole office. Can you explain what happened that day?
Yes, ma'am. I called him in to set him up on the call-in system, the new call-in system for a minimum caseload. When he came through at the door, I grabbed his bag to check. That's what I always do. And right before I opened it, he said, "Oh, I have bullets in there." So I said, "Why do you have bullets?" I looked in his bag, and he had quite a few of them. He told me that they were used for a campfire when he went camping. That he was using the gunpowder for that. At that point, I put him onto the call-in system and then took him over to the supervisor's office, in which he said that his son was with him camping, that he didn't have a weapon. So we called the son. The son said he did have the weapon to use for those bullets. The son told us that he didn't know why his dad would have them and didn't say anything about a campfire being used for the ammunition that he had. And that's what I have.
Okay. All right. Mr. Goings, that's a different than what we heard today.
I have no recollection of ever telling her that I had bullets in that bag. As I mentioned earlier, I was in the process of putting on my belt and phone case. When she asked me, that was the first thing that was said, she asked me, "What are you doing with these?" I never said they, that anything like that was in there, but, wow, anyway.
So, Mr. Goins, I'm sorry, was your son with you on the camping trip?
No.
Okay.
And then, as in, and that bag wasn't with me either.
On the camping trip?
No.
Okay.
Can parole officer Lopez hear me?
Yes. I think so.
I mentioned at the beginning of this that I wanted to apologize to you, Ms. Lopez, for lying about using those for starting a campfire. Since then, I've found out how they got into the bag, and also, and I'm being repetitive now because the board members have already heard this, that I found out that they were used when my son used the bag in my truck. And I didn't know that at the time, and when you showed them to me in the bag and asked me, what are you doing with these? I thought in my mind, what am I doing with these? But out of my mouth came that lie that I used them to start campfires with when I went camping. That's the way it happened with me.
Okay. My thing is that when we called your son, he didn't know why you would have had that.
Well, he wouldn't have known what I told you about using them, you know, like that, because it was a lie.
Okay.
Understood. Okay, thank you, Mr. Turner. Thank you for bringing that up. Mr. Quinones,
if it's okay with Madam Chair.
Please.
May I ask a follow-up question to the officer?
Please.
Yeah, Ms. Lopez, or Officer Lopez?
Yes.
How does Mr. Goins as your parolee, so to speak?
He's compliant. Compliant is what you're supposed to do, call them when you're supposed to do, come in, or go to his residence and see him. So up until that point, he was compliant for the time that I've had him supervised.
Thank you, Ms. Lopez.
Okay, any other questions from board members? Okay, Mr. Goins, we're coming up on the conclusion of your hearing, and I want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement if there's something you've thought of that hasn't already been said, because a lot has been said here. And we'll also give you the opportunity, you can have your attorney speak, you can have yourself speak, but I just ask, since this hearing has gone so long, that you not repeat something you've already said. So what,
no,
anything
I don't
else?
Have anything further, I don't have anything further to say, and if Mr. Gurian or Omer has something to say, he feel free, but no, I haven't thought of anything else.
Okay, sir. Well, Mr. Gurian's coming up to the microphone. Please repeat your name.
That's okay. Omer Gurian, attorney for Mr. Goins.
Thank you.
I have no reason to doubt Theo Lopez's recollection of the events. However, I do believe that if she thought that there was an admission in such a way to I have bullets in there, that would have been included in the warrant. As it was, what was included was his statement about making a campfire. What this sounds like to me, and I think the reasonable explanation, a not inconsistent explanation based on Mr. Goins' description of what happened, is that the bag was opened and shown to Mr. Goins, and he said, I have bullets in there. Again, I think Mr. Goins has a lot going for him prior to this. As Ms. Lopez said, he was compliant up until this point. And just in the interests of justice, which I think are worth considering, the sentence imposed in this case for Mr. Goins could not be imposed today. It would be illegal for him to receive a life sentence. And while certainly it is not something that we are asking the board to do, because I don't think this board can, it is worth considering that he has served 25 flat calendar years. Were the same offense to occur today, he would have likely served around 15. Moreover, I think this is what Mr. Goins was trying to say about Apprendi, and again, I'm not trying to get into a legal argument with anyone, but I am a lawyer, so I will not say it. Had this happened today, the finding which got him a life sentence, which is that he was on probation for an offense involving an offense, would have had to be found by a jury. That did not happen in Mr. Goins' trial. Mr. Goins has spent a substantial amount of his time with the Department of Corrections, and he does have a significant disciplinary record, although I would note that as he progressed and aged in the Department of Corrections, the severity of infractions lowered. And in fact, looking at my my information, I'm not sure if it's consistent with what the parole office has, I believe that his most recent violation was disobeying an order in 2005 and disrespect in 2005. Horseplay, staff obstruction, the only major violation I see really recently was 1998. And so Mr. Goins has improved as one would expect. Age lessens a person's criminal behavior. That has happened here. Mr. Goins is not going to come out and reoffend. He hasn't done so. If he was going to do so, he would have done so already. Again, I think you can see Mr. Goins' boneheaded decision-making here. Clearly, he should have checked this bag. No doubt about it. Clearly, he should not have used this particular bag. But I would note for the board that this is a multi-purpose bag. As you can see, there's even a hole in here to put headphones through. So it is. It is a holster. But it's also a very utilitarian bag. With that, I think Mr. Goins has spent 2 additional months in the Department of Corrections. I do believe he has learned a lesson. Given his compliance, his substantial family support, which I think the board can see, and his past performance on parole, I think he should be reinstated without additional conditions. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, sir. Any board member have any additional question before we go into? Okay, Mr. Goins, the board is going to go into discussion. We'll do all of our discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law, so we've not talked about your case before right now. So all we ask is that you and everyone in the room just remain silent and the board will discuss and be back in touch. Okay, the board is now in discussion. This is certainly an interesting case. We have an individual who's substantially compliant on parole, but certainly made a very poor decision, which bothers me very much. Carrying that ammunition into the parole office, and just even having the pack with a holster in it, as someone who committed his crime with a weapon, granted it was a long time ago, but I am quite torn on this one. And I understand people change, I understand he's doing well, but he sure made a very, very, very poor decision that day. I'll just start discussion with the board. Mr. Johnson.
Hi. I think he has done very well since he's been on parole. He actually came before this board, and the board had to authorize him to be released on parole. There's some things, one of the things that was on from the condition of his parole that he wasn't to be drinking, and I think that at least as you look what I'm looking at, it looks like the last time he had something to drink may have been, according to the records that we have, 2016, I think it was the last time. But I'm going to tell you, I'm very disappointed in this information that we received, and then to bring this bag in here and say that the bag is just a regular bag, that it is a, we call them fanny pack, but it is a holster that's only, usually can only be purchased where, there's weapons, firearms, because that's the main purpose of it, to actually do that. I don't know where, whatever the purse is at, but that's a holster. It's usually the main purpose of it is the gun holster that's actually in there. So I wanted to look at it because it has a holster that's involved in there. And I think that having those, that ammunition that's in the pack, that even if you would have seen it, it would have, I think you would have noticed it, that you had ammunition in there. I'm telling you what my disappointment is the story that we're getting as to why the ammunition was actually in there. There was one story that it was used for starting fires, which he admits that was just a statement that he made in there. But I'm just disappointed in the story. Actually, I don't really believe the story that they're using, that the ammunition was just there. And he had no idea that the ammunition was there. That's just not believable.
Yeah. other comments? Mr. Quinones?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't believe I'm the one who's saying this, based on 24 years as an ATF agent and knowing full well that felons can't have ammunition or a firearm. I am surprisingly open to what his attorney, Mr. Gurian, had stated, and how I'm putting it is this. In my opinion, he would have to be oblivious that 18, 45 rounds were in that bag to show up at the parole office with a bag of ammunition in it. I don't want to make excuses, per se, but it is almost too dumb-headed to think otherwise. And which is why I'm not really in the argumentative room with my colleagues. I'm just open more to the idea that he did something really, really stupid. And and that's juxtaposed with the fact that he has been a working member of society, one of these sort of otherwise success stories that I, as well, don't want to see. But this is, as you stated to begin with, a difficult deliberation because, you know, if it had been one of the earlier alcohol uses, for example, I think parole officers tend to work with their clients and get them counseling or treatment. He's been sober for a couple of years and it seems to be a productive member of society, so I'm a little more torn than you would think I'd be otherwise. That's where I'll hand it back.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Yes. Mr. Neal?
Well, it was a word used by Mr. Quinones' attorney and Mr. Quinones said, I grew up being called that bunch. And that was one of my dad's favorite words. And it applied to stupid mistakes. I mean, you know, things that most people wouldn't do. I have to agree with Mr. Quinones, and you know, I'm not a guy to agree with anything else, but I have ladies around firearms. And 18 rounds is pretty heavy. When the state was to Officer Lopez, I have ammunition, you know, oops, I have ammunition before she found it or after she found it, it's kind of irrelevant, it's there. As far as the bag and the use of the bag, I have an undisturbable holster in my truck. It's been there for 3 years, and in that time period, my gun has been in it maybe 2 hours. The rest of the night is my grinder opener. It's perfect. And I'm down there, you can't see it. You know, the prison's peeing there, probably aren't going to pick up the grinder opener when they take my registration. The point of that is what the bag intended use or possible intended use to me is, you know, without firearms, to say he's got firearms, that's why he's carrying holster. I don't buy into the thing that because it is a holster type pouch that that's necessarily involved. He had ammunition. He's a prohibited possessor for a couple of reasons. However, he's been a success story up to that point. So about 6 years of a success story, which is one of the things that as a board member, I look for people that are going out, returning to society. Everyone's entitled to make some mistakes. This one is entitled to mistake. It's concerning because of his history and because he's not supposed to have a gun and everything, but with the family around him that he's got, and all the support, I think he was a success story that made him only have a mistake. And I, as much as I like to see no weapons, no ammunition, no indication of any weapons or even in possession, much as that concerned me, I think in this case I would be very much in favor of reinstating Mr. Lawrence Perot, and I think it would be reinstating it to let him continue being a success story. I mean, that's my opinion.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Johnson?
I think it was, and he has certainly been a success story. I mean, everyone's testified he's been unselfish, courteous, kind, caring for his parents as well as his girlfriend's parents, been there for his sisters and his nephew and his son. I'm tell you that I still strongly disagree, and the only reason I disagree because I think that when you come before this board, you should be honest. And I don't think it was a bonehead mistake that he had that ammunition inside there. And had I not looked in the bag to see that it was a holster and what it's used for, then I would have just looked at it as just being a regular bag that bag was brought down there. That bag is a holster. And that's what disturbs me about it, is that I'm just not buying into the story that he didn't know that the bullets were in the holster. And then you have a PO who's testifying that when she asked him, he stated that the bullets were in there, inside the holster. He said that he didn't know they were in there. And to eliminate her story, and we still don't know why the bullets were inside the holster. And she says that she talked to the son, and the son said he didn't know why he would actually have them, to come up with the story that, you know, they were used to start a fire. That's just not true. The reason why he had those in there, I really don't have no idea. I don't know if he had a gun, or he carried a gun, or he used a gun, or what happened. But I do know that, you know, there's nothing indicating, you know, any honesty. And I still don't think we know at this point in time, you know, how or why he came in possession of those bullets, 14 bullets, I think it was, how many? 18 bullets being in that fanny pack. And if you look at that fanny pack and you see the size of the fanny pack itself, or the size of the area where the bullets were, it would be very difficult to notice that, to not notice 18 large bullets, you know, contained inside there. So I just don't buy into the story why he was in possession of those bullets and what those bullets was doing, and the actual fact that it is a holster cover. That's just my opinion, you know, how I feel about it. I've had the opportunity to use those packs and fanny packs. I've seen them used for different things, and having that same experience in law enforcement and the capability of using things like that to carry weapons undercover and conceal that, I'm just not buying into that story. I think that had I felt that he was honest in the beginning about it, then I would feel that he made a mistake. But I'm just not buying into that, you know, it was a bonehead mistake. It was just dishonesty from what he told the parole officer to where he started testifying in the beginning. He started talking and saying that it was just a holster. I mean, just a bag that he was carrying it in, when in reality it was a holster. He knows it was a holster. He knows that it was a casing in there for it. He didn't mention or admit to any of that until I looked at it and saw that's what it was. Other than that, he would have, you know, it almost appears to me that the purpose of bringing a bag was, you know, pulling a wool wide so that it would look like just a regular bag, which is designed for. In reality, it was a holster. That's just the way I feel about it. So I'm not in agreement. And I don't think that, you know, if he's violated, it's not a life sentence. He would have an opportunity to come back before this board again, just as, you know, anyone else that's on parole and has a 25-year sentence, they have a time, either 6 months or a year, to come back before this board.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Okay, well, gosh, this is a very difficult case. I think, with complete respect to you, because I hear what you're saying. I do hear what you're saying. But I'm also many other factors, and I'm going to go ahead and make a motion based on information on warrant 2018W2341, testimony of Mr. Goins, testimony of Pio Lopez, and information provided by his supporters. I'm going to move to continue Mr. Goins on supervision with the same conditions, and I will certainly recommend very strongly that that bag be destroyed or not used, given away. But that is my motion.
Second? Agreed.
Understood, sir. Motion by myself, seconded by Ms. Was it you, Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And agreed by Mr. Quinones and disagreed by Mr. Johnson. So continuing supervision, same conditions. So conditions remain exactly the way they were. Okay, back to you, Mr. Goins. The board has voted to continue you on, so we continue, correct? If, as long as there's three.
Yes.
Yes. Continuing you on supervision, but I would strongly urge you to get rid of that bag. Get a different bag, perhaps. Get a bag that suits you, but when you think it, you know, as your attorney and Mr. Quinones and Mr. Neal pointed out, that was really a stupid thing to do. And you don't,
yeah, like you said,
you don't strike me as that kind of guy. But you really need to think about what you're doing. I feel, frankly, in this whole interaction, I feel a little deceived, and I don't like that. But I am sticking my neck out for you, and as are these other board members. I don't feel like I have the whole story, but your 6 years of being on parole and your family support here is counting for something. But I certainly hope that we never see you again, sir.
That's going to be guaranteed. And Derek, can you hear me?
Yeah, sir, I'm sorry, it's a protocol thing, but you really can only, you can direct to the board.
I just wanted to let, okay, if he can hear me, I want him to take that bag to his house with him. I don't want it at my house no more.
So that's okay. That will conclude your hearing unless you have questions. They work with your CO3 about whatever paperwork needs to be done. It'll take some processing out time.
Likely the next question was when I would be able to leave here. I'd have to make travel arrangements.
Yeah.
I got to work out with my CO3, correct?
Exactly. And I want to thank you for participating. Thanks to everyone who came today.
Thank you.
And this will conclude your hearing. Thank you, Officer Lopez. And we'll disconnect at this point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.